boom, right when you take a drink of water, that's when we go live, always.
That's when we go live.
What's
yeah.
up, my friend? Good
I'm
to
good.
See you. Good
yeah,
to see you.
Thanks for having me, bro.
My pleasure. I'm a big fan. I've been a fan for
Thank
a long time.
Thank you so much.
And I'm very excited about this Badr Hari rematch. So we were just talking about it. That's yeah. going to be in December.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
It's going to be huge. I think it's going to be the biggest fight in kickboxing history.
I think it's already.
Yeah.
I mean, you were just saying that the tickets go on presale today, I think.
Yeah, today or tomorrow. Or something.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Where is it going to be held? Is it in Holland?
Yeah, it's going to be in Holland. Yeah.
So where at?
It's called the Gelderdome. And
how many seats is that?
I believe around 25,000-30,000.
Wow.
So
it's
huge.
Crazy how big kickboxing is in Holland as opposed to America.
Yeah, but Holland, Europe, it's a lot bigger than it is here.
So I do not for the life of me understand why it hasn't taken off in America. I don't get it.
Well, I think the step of going to MMA than to kickboxing is so much closer. For example, from high school, it's so much more logical when you do wrestling,
right.
you do a little bit of boxing. Well, let's jump into MMA then, because
right.
it's so close to each other. And when you go to kickboxing, it's totally different.
Right.
It's
but
totally different.
So many people in America, when they watch MMA, they want guys to stand up.
Yeah, I know.
That's why it doesn't make any sense.
But still, I think like every country is like very patriotic. They want their own guys
right.
to be very good at something.
Sort of, but like when Anderson Silva was at the top of the heap in MMA, everybody wanted to see him fight.
Yeah.
It didn't matter that he was from Brazil.
Yeah, that's true.
In America, they still wanted to see him fight. It's just, they want to see high-level stuff. Everyone here is such a fan of knockouts and striking and high-level striking. I just don't understand it.
No.
Muay Thai, too. Muay Thai doesn't sell at all.
No.
I mean, there's no big Muay Thai events. Like, they had a pro Muay Thai league event here. And it was in like Nicky Holtzkin fought on it, and Bull Kyle, and a few other big name guys fought on it. But it's like, you know, nobody in the crowd.
No, but also like Muay Thai is also with the clinching, and they hold too long.
Right.
It's like, I think it's a little bit boring. Like with what we do with Glory now is like more commercial. You can hold like just for three seconds,
right?
And then break, and then continue
right.
fighting. So, and in the end, that's what people want to see.
I get that, but I like clinch work too, and I like elbows and knees in the clinch. You don't like it?
No. I like the knees, but the
elbows.
No,
too many cuts.
They're nasty. Yeah,
they're
nasty. So
cuts are nasty.
Yeah. So I had.
What do you think about how like the amateur Muay Thai guys have elbow pads?
Yeah, that's I think that's
and all that's preventing for people who don't understand what we're talking about. It's weird that like we see you can see with bare knuckle boxing. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of bare knuckle boxing matches now, and you see these guys' faces are just getting destroyed.
Yeah, it's
they just ripped apart. It's crazy.
It's not healthy.
No, it's not. It's definitely not good for the longevity of your career.
No,
and so in amateur Muay Thai, they have these elbow pads that they wear, and that would. I mean, you still can knock guys out just as easily, but
you're
not
going
to get the cuts.
Exactly,
cuts are the big.
So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah,
but I'm just not a big fan of the elbow work. But I love to see it, but I don't like to get it. So I remember. I think I was training with the Black Zillions like years ago. I think it was even before I became champion, and I was training there doing a little bit of MMA. Helping some guys out, and I was training, and somebody just—he said on accident, he just pop threw an elbow right on the nose, and he just opened it up just a little bit. And I was like, "What the hell are you doing?" Yeah, I'm sorry.
An accident.
Yeah, an accident. So I gave him a few extra low kicks after that.
In MMA, I mean, it's such a staple technique.
Yeah,
you know, it's probably hard to not do it.
Yeah.
You've had a couple MMA fights, right?
One.
Just one?
Yeah.
And you mounted the guy.
Yeah.
That was crazy. You took him to the ground.
Yeah. I was like, let's give it a try when we're in there. We got to try everything.
But when I saw it, I was like, damn, if he makes his way to MMA, because the heavyweight division, particularly in the UFC, is extremely shallow.
Yeah.
Extremely shallow. I mean, you have some great talent, but there's like four or five really good fighters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like There's obviously Cormier, there's Stipe, Francis Ngannou, there's a few other guys, but it's you know with a couple of wins, you're in the mix for a heavyweight title shot.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever thought about doing that?
I thought about it.
Thought about it?
Thought
how
about
old
it.
Are you? Still young, right?
Yeah,
how old are you?
Yeah, 30.
Yeah. See, so, which is crazy because you've had a lot of fights, right?
Yeah, I had about 60, 70 fights.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know, and it's but the thing is, as a European, like fighting in Glory, like that's what people don't understand. It is enormous overseas.
It's crazy.
It's hard for people to in America. They're like, what, kickboxing? But if you go to see those events, I mean, I watch all of them.
Yeah.
You watch the events on television. It's like fucking crazy packed crowds.
Yeah, it's always full.
The first fight you had with Botter, holy shit, was that crowd hot?
Yeah.
That was a wild crowd.
Yeah, they even like jumped to the ropes and everything went crazy. So.
Well, it ended in a fucked up way.
Yeah.
You know, Botter said his arm was hurt. Like, what was the... Did he get an MRI or anything like that?
I have no clue. Not from the organization or something. So, yeah, he did some bandage or something over his arm in the neck because that's what he posted on Instagram. But I don't know. I don't know. For me, it was... yeah, you know, it was like an anticlimax.
Yes.
That wasn't the way I wanted to end that fight.
Right.
But I think for the rest, for him, this was the perfect way to end the fight because this is the way you could get a rematch.
Mm.
Because if he would have lost, no point in doing a rematch. If he would get knocked out, no point in doing a rematch. So,
unless it was a really close fight and then you eventually won.
Yeah.
You know?
But. From my feeling, everybody's like, yeah, but Rico walked into the jabs the first round and everything. That's true. But I was pressuring him. I was pressuring him the whole time, and I was trying to feel like where is my distance where I can hit and where I get hit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, that's...
Right,
yeah,
you get tagged.
You get tagged sometimes. So my nose was already, during training, my nose opened up. So when he hit it, it opened up again. So I was like, yeah, it is what it is. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not really bothered by it. So I was pressuring, and I was like, okay, now I got it. So after that first round, and yeah, then we jumped into the second round. I was fit. I was ready for this fight, and that's what I like to do. I would like to drag people into the deep waters.
Well, you're very fit for a heavyweight. You have crazy cardio. That's one of the things that I've always admired about your fighting style. So you put insane pressure on guys for a heavyweight, because heavyweights, bigger guys, tend to fight at a slower pace and with less volume. But you push a pace, and when the fight gets to the third, fourth, and fifth rounds, you fucking pile it on, man.
Yeah, because I've been training with light guys for like my whole career. So when I started at the gym, I started it with the Super Pro Sports Center. With Dennis Carrillo, he had Albert Kraus. He was the first K1 Max champion. And he had Alfier Lima, like multiple middleweight champion, world champion. So I was working with those guys like every day. And they just kept on pressuring me. And like, blah, 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 blah. I was getting my ass whooped like almost every day by like guys that weighed like 75 kilos. So I was like, I can keep hitting those guys hard, or just go with less power and pressure them like they try to pressure me. And of course, in the beginning, it's like still you get tired, but at a certain moment, you get like, "Hey, this is going better," and
right.
just not try to hit
endurance.
Them. Yeah, don't try to hit them hard, but just try to keep the work like
now,
a machine gun.
Is that something that happens in a fight as well, where you have to balance out how hard you swing versus like not going full blast, but going technical, knowing that you can start unloading in the third, fourth, and fifth rounds, and you start to see them fade?
But it's for me, it's like I'm playing a game. For me, this is, we always say fighting is a thinking man's game, because fighting, everybody can fight. When they have to, everybody can fight. When doesn't matter what person, when you put them in a corner and it's life or death, everybody can fight. But it's so much more than that. It's so much more than just fighting. So, and that's how I try to step into the ring. with that mentality. Like
people don't understand that who've never competed. The managing of the resources is a big factor,
exactly.
Right? Like when do you decide to hit the gas? And you see like guys in MMA, you see it with a guy like Nick Diaz. Like Nick Diaz is famous for not hitting guys hard. He just stays on you.
Yeah.
He just stays on you with a lot of volume, and then you get tired.
Yeah.
And then he starts unloading.
Exactly.
You know, with big shots.
So and that's what I like to do. The biggest compliment I could get from an opponent, and I had it like from my last six opponents, I got like three or four times. They said like, Rico, now I understand why you are the champion. I fought everybody. But this I've never felt before. And you're on a different level. And that's the biggest compliment I could get, because I'm in the ring for five rounds with this guy. And they got every opportunity to do everything they've trained for with me for five rounds. So I didn't knock them out. We just fought for five rounds. But they just did not know what to do. And that's, for me, the biggest compliment I could get.
Yeah, to be technical and to just play your game.
Exactly.
Yeah. I really loved your rematch with Jamal Ben-Sadiq.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite fights of yours.
I believe that.
It was a great fight.
It's like that was like the full Rocky version of a fight that people would love to see. You get tagged in the beginning and then you
overwhelmed him. Yeah. And then when you put him away, I was like, holy shit, what a fight.
Yeah.
What a fight that was. That guy's a big motherfucker, too.
Yeah, he's a big guy. And I lost against him like back in the days, and when I was like just a little kid, and so this fight brought something with it as well. He's like, yeah, he's the champion now, but I beat him. But it was like 6-7 years ago. I'm a totally different fighter than I was back then. So I said, let's go, I'm ready for you. So yeah, this was the best thing. And he spit in my face during a press conference, so I got some extra motivation for that fight.
Well, you played it out perfectly, too, where even when he hit you and hurt you early in the fight, you stayed calm, you didn't get emotional, you used good defense, and then once you got him into the deep water, you stopped him in the fourth?
In the fifth.
Fifth round.
Yeah.
Once you got him into deep water, then you piled it on and then put him away.
But then again, it's the same thing for me. Everybody asks, okay, but how did you do that? You got tagged. And I said, but then again, like I said, it's a thinking man's game. So
right.
I get hit. From my point of view, I made a mistake. I switched to southpaw, but instead of switching and stepping outside of his front leg, I was right in front of his leg, and he was just throwing a left right, and I was walked straight into that. And that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that, from my point of view, that he timed that.
Right.
So it happened, and from that moment, I can do two things. I can think, okay, I can jump into the fight and try to get that point or whatever, that moment back, or just think in my mind like, okay, fuck it, you lost this round. Take it, and let's go fresh into the second.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
So just think about, okay, I lost this round, but I got four more to go, and I got back into the corner, and my trainer says, hey, you back? So, yep. Okay. He's tired now.
Yeah, when he tried to unload on you, he emptied out a lot of the gas tank when he had you hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's the game, right? Trying to figure out when you can finish and when you can't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just stay focused, stay relaxed. And, of course, he hit me with some good shots, but...
Well, he's a big, powerful guy.
Yeah.
He's always a dangerous fighter. That guy's huge.
Yeah,
what is he, like 6'9", 6'10",
or something like that? Yeah,
something like that,
yeah. And then, he's huge, in like 270 pounds, I think.
Yeah.
That's
big motherfucker.
That's a big motherfucker. So, and then he's like, yeah, now it's 1-1. I said, come on, man. You beat me like 6-7 years. I beat you.
Oh, he wants another fight?
Yeah, he wants
another. How many fights has he had since then?
I don't know. He won a tournament last year.
Right.
So,
sent a few.
Yeah, so maybe that fight's going to come. But like I said, now I'm in, like last year, the 31st of December, my contract was finished with Glory. So we've been in negotiations ever since. So from that moment on, I said, in my last contract, you guys told me the butter fight was going to happen, and it didn't happen. So that's what I want first. Give me the butter fight, and from that moment on, we're going to discuss.
Yeah, so for people who don't know the sport, Badr Hari is one of the biggest names in the sport, like, forever. He's a guy who, he's stopped Alistair Overeem. He, you know, he's fought in K1.
He fought everybody. Semi Shield, Peter Arts, whatever.
I mean, he's a fucking wild man, too. Yeah. You know, but he hasn't fought in high-level competition for a long time. No. And then he fought you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the thing was, everybody was... I was beating everybody. I was champion and I was beating everybody. People said, yeah, Rico's good. He's the champion, but he hasn't fought Badr. I was like, hey, if he was. So on national television, I said, hey, if he wants to fight, let's go.
But he had been dealing with a bunch of legal troubles.
Yeah, so he had a lot of problems. Yeah.
He broke someone's leg in a club.
Yeah, a lot of shit.
So, crazy shit. There's a video of him slapping some guy's face in a hotel.
Yeah.
Like, imagine that guy slapping your face. You're some poor dude working behind the counter. Yeah. Badr comes in like, yikes.
Yikes, yeah. Do whatever you want.
Here, take the key, sir. Yeah. Which room
would
you like?
The hotel is yours.
Yeah.
So yeah, he had a bunch of problems, but... Then eventually the fight happened because that's the fight that people wanted to see.
Yeah.
But for me, it was just like another fight. Mm-hmm. Then the fight ended that way. Yeah, that was too bad. So, but now we can do it again.
Yeah. So the fight was quite a while ago. How long ago was that?
2016.
Yeah, that's a. Why did it take so long for the rematch?
Yeah, there was a bunch of stuff going on in between, and like last year he fought Hesdy Gürges, also a good kickboxer. I believe he's now doing MMA in Bellator, and
he's fought Hesdy before, right?
Yeah, he fought Hesdy before, but got disqualified.
So, oh, that's right, he stomped him when he was on the ground. Him,
yeah. So, yeah. So, and but after that
that's,
fight,
he's so crazy.
Yeah, he's so and
he's
then,
such a wild dude.
Yeah, and then after that fight, they both got caught. With using whatever.
Oh, steroids.
Yeah.
Oh.
So they both got suspended. And or I believe Hesdy wasn't suspended. I don't know. But he got suspended till December this year. So that's why.
How did the fight go the last when you fought last year with Hesdy?
He won. Won. But it wasn't easy, but he won.
Was it lost? I mean, a decision or was it?
It was a decision, yeah.
Yeah, so for him, that was the first fight since your fight with him in 2016. Is that it?
Yeah.
He's had a bunch of legal problems.
Yeah.
But and now he's not training at Mike's gym anymore as well, right?
No.
Do you know who he's training with?
I don't know his name, but I know the guy, but don't know who he's training with.
Well, now. He looks good on Instagram.
For sure.
Looks very fit.
A lot of people look good. A lot of people look good on Instagram. You know that. When you see him in real life, it looks totally different.
Well, I'm sure he looks the same.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is when you're in high level competition, like he was, of course, in the days when he fought Alistair, before Alistair made the transition full time to MMA, before he came to Strikeforce and all that stuff. That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably hard to get back. And to jump straight into top level competition like Hesdy, or especially like fighting you as a champion, that's a big leap, right?
Yeah. So, but that's the thing. Now we both have it. So he fought last year, March, and I fought last year September. So because I'm still in negotiations with Glory for a new contract. So it's both been a while for us, but I've been. Before that, I was like in a
much
crazy,
more active,
crazy active flow.
Yeah, you definitely have much more momentum, and just there's a thing about fighting too. When guys take a long time off, it's almost like they lose the feel for it.
Yeah,
they lose. They know how to kick, they know how to punch, they know what to do. They're in shape.
Yeah,
but there's a feel that they have for the ring. For
exactly. This is where people don't understand, like, hey, you step in the ring and that's what you do. That's what you were born to do. That's true, but you need that tension, you need that vibe of walking towards the ring, stepping into the ring, all those people looking at you at that moment. That's a certain type of feeling that you get, and
you gotta be comfortable with it.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. You gotta feel comfortable. And the only way you can be comfortable and stay comfortable is being active.
Yes, being active is very, it's just so critical for a fighter. When a guy takes a year off or 2 years off or three, I mean, it's like, oof, the more the time is, the more it becomes problematic.
Yeah, and the older you get, that's
yes.
the
yes. How old's Botter now?
35, I think.
Hmm.
So yeah.
Does Glory drug test?
Yeah.
They do?
That's how he got caught.
Was it him or was it an athletic commission? I mean, was it Glory or was it...
It's not Glory. It's an Dutch...
Like a local, like a Dutch athletic commission. And so they're going to drug test for this fight as well?
Yeah, for sure. So I got tested like every time.
Is it like WADA testing, like the same standards? Like World Anti-Doping Agency?
Yeah.
So they like wake you up like 7 o'clock in the morning? Hey, Rico.
Oh, no. Oh, that's not the testing. They just test at the events.
Oh. So
I would even rather have that.
Yeah.
Just wake up and random come test, but that's not what they do. But they test like really strict when you're there.
Yeah, that's a little bit easier to pass, though.
That's true.
No, that's a lot easier to pass, I should say.
I have no clue. Yeah. I don't know what to do or what ways there are to, because I'm not on it. I don't want to stay busy. I don't want to think about it.
Right.
But whatever, you know, I just jump in there and just do what I got to do. But that's why I told Glory now, again, after this whole issue, because a lot of people were caught last year and they didn't expect that. I was like, hey, we got to keep doing this because this is the way we make the sport clean.
Yes.
And I think that's what we deserve because we are a good sport. We are all athletes, but I want to be safe in the ring. And what do you mean with safe? You're going into a fight, I understand, but somebody that uses whatever can maybe just punch a little bit harder in the beginning of the fight or whatever.
Have a little more endurance.
Exactly.
Hit you with some punches they wouldn't be able to hit you with. They're not on some shit.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what I mean. With telling Glory, I want to be safe when I'm in the ring.
Well, for sure. I mean, if one person's on it and one person's not, that's, you know, it's a giant advantage. Anybody says it's not, it's just lying to themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I'm, in the end, you know, I just go in there and I'm not even thinking about it.
Well, it is the fight to make in kickboxing too. And if there's a fight that I could tell people, hey, you got to watch, you really want to know what kickboxing is all about, watch this fight. That is the fight. Because Botter's such a wild man, and he's such a knockout artist, and you obviously one of the most successful heavyweights ever. You know, I mean, your kickboxing record in Glory, I mean, just the highlight reel is amazing. You've had so many great fights over there,
too. Yeah, I've been doing so good. I really enjoy myself. And that's what I said. I want to bring kickboxing to a new level. Like, especially when you go now in Holland. Like, normally in Holland, it was like soccer or whatever, cycling or ice skating. That's where parents would bring their kids to and do that, do kickboxing, do kickboxing. And now they're like, hey, kickbox, this is cool.
Because when did that change?
I think like 2-3 years ago.
What made it change?
I think because of the Botter fight. That was so we were getting more airtime, and after the Botter fight. And everything that happened around him, that was surrounding him, like the things you said would happen outside in the club and this and that.
Yeah.
He was like the national asshole.
Right.
And I was like the national good guy. Because everybody. Right. So, and that was like the perfect clash. And then, of course, I beat him. So everybody was like, oh, shit, he's our hero.
Right.
So that's how everything a little bit exploded. But
again, for you, that's unsatisfying the way it happened, though, that he gets his arm injured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In whatever way, reason, or whatever he thinks happened. But, like...
Because you're suspicious about
I'm suspicious about it. So, because he's looking at one arm, then looking at the other arm, and it's a vague thing for me. But but that's what I have with this whole thing that he tries to create. It's like... When he's getting announced and everything, he's like, yeah, Botter, Harry, 110 something fights, 90 knockouts. But I'm obsessed with what I'm doing. When I fight and when I have an opponent and I'm fighting, I'm looking for everything. I want to know everything about you. And everything these days you can find on the internet. So when I'm looking on the internet, and for example, you look at Wikipedia and you're looking at all the fights from back in the days, K1 days, and even before that, you maybe get to 60, 70 fights. So where are the other fights? Does that mean like when you were younger in the youth period, you did like 40 something fights? Did you knock everybody out? I don't know. My trainer's been there for years, even before that, and he doesn't know about it. So that's strange, because everything is documented on the internet. Everything you can find on the internet. So
you think his record's inflated?
I think so.
He's got some crazy knockouts, though.
He got
the Stefan Leko, the wheel kick.
Yeah, the wheel kick's Woo! Crazy. But that's what I said. He's got mm-hmm. that. He's got amazing records, but yeah. I think it's not as crazy as they make it to be.
Which is crazy, because the reality is pretty crazy. I mean, you don't need to hype it up any more than it really is,
mm-hmm.
right?
No, but it's been there for years. Like, hey, right. he did 100-something fights, so mm-hmm. many knockouts. But when I look at it, I can't find it.
Mm,
because,
I see what you're saying.
But maybe it's there. Maybe it's there. Maybe it's from years ago or whatever. I don't know. But that's all that I'm looking at.
You're suspicious.
I'm suspicious about it, because when I look at Wikipedia and I'm looking at when he was around, it starts from when he was around 16 till now. It's like 60, 70 fights.
It's funny when you look at him in the early days, too. He was so skinny.
Yeah.
Like, even when he fought Stefan Leko, you know? And then now he's just fucking jacked.
Yeah.
But he put so much time into strength and conditioning workouts. You could see, like, he's always doing some crazy strength routine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
do you do a lot of strength and conditioning? Like, what are your workouts like, as opposed to, like, how much skill work do you do and how much strength and conditioning work?
I think it's pretty even balanced out. I think I train strength like 3 times a week. But even my strength routine is so balanced out with doing strength. And in the same muscle group, I also do conditioning. So first I do low reps and then I do a lot of reps. Because these muscles aren't supposed to be big. They need to be strong, and they need to be making the same punch 50 times with the same strength. So right. not 10 times really hard. No, 50 times on the same strength, right. the same level. So that's how we approach that. And then, we got skill training like 2-3 times a week, like pad work. I got explosive training. So I try to always look also at different sports. At soccer, at American football, and at ice skating. And they all have a certain type of explosiveness that they train in a certain way. So I tried to pick everything from everywhere and work with that. So we created a training that we just use for being explosive. So it has nothing to do with endurance, because it's maybe like 45 minutes and it's just a few seconds. Bam! You go. Come back, go, you come back, because logically for a big guy you're slow. When something is big and heavy, it's slow, and that's what we try to do. We try to be as fast as possible for a big guy.
So a lot of plyometric type stuff, yeah, explosive exactly. type stuff,
yeah, yeah. Now, speed ladders, yeah. and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah. So when you do this kind of stuff, when you were saying that you lift low reps and then high reps.
Yeah.
So you do like heavy weights first.
Yeah.
So just to try to like max out or get the muscles very tired, and then really wear them out with reps.
Yeah.
Is that what you do?
Yeah, but we never go max.
So right.
They're not like over max, but we.
So you don't go to failure with like heavy weights.
No.
Yeah.
No,
what kind of stuff are you doing? Are you doing like dumbbells, kettlebells? Like
a lot of dumbbells.
Yeah.
Yeah. As much loose weight as possible. Like a few. With the barbell, but as much with the dumbbells, because that's when you gotta keep in balance and work on that core and stuff like mm-hmm. that.
So what about sparring? How often do you spar a week?
Normally like 2-3 times a week.
And when you do it, are you doing hard spar? I know you're from Holland. Those fucking Holland guys like to spar hard, man. Yeah. Do you do a lot of hard sparring? Is it more technical? Like how do you balance it out?
It depends. Depends on who's in. Because now in preparation we're gonna fly guys in, and then, yeah, it's gonna be pretty tough sparring, because that's what you get the guys for.
Right.
But in the end, I'm always thinking about, hey, we do hard sparring, but we don't want to injure each other.
Right.
There's no point for me in knocking guys out during sparring, because then I don't have any sparring partners anymore.
Right.
So I do hard sparring, kick him hard on the legs, kick him hard on the body. And of course, people get knocked down, not knocked out, but right. knocked down.
But you don't go full blast to the head.
No.
That's a Holland thing, right? I mean, there's a lot of Dutch guys.
A lot of guys do it, yeah.
Spar like that, but yeah. It's,
we go pretty tough. We right. go pretty tough to the head, black eyes, bloody nose, but I'm always like 90% going. I'm always looking at like, hey, or when I'm making a move and I can make a head kick, I always try to, when I see I'm going to make a full hit, try to keep it back just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, but just being controlled, I think it's very important. So I train with all the guys, all the heavyweight guys from Glory I trained with, and of course we do hard sparring, but we do not, I from my point of view, I don't want to injure them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it only makes sense. I mean, that's one of the most valuable things, right, is to have high-level training partners.
Exactly.
And if guys think you're going to put them to sleep all the time, they're not really yeah. interested in sparring
with you. For example, I train with Benny Adigbui. He's like the number two and number three in Glory. And I fought him twice. But we trained together. He's now at my gym. And I try to make him better. I say, hey, you try this, try that. And
because if he's better, you're better.
Exactly. And people yeah. are like, no. I don't want to train with competition because then they know what I'm going to do. That's true. But you also know what they're doing. So it just depends on how you approach things. I think every negative thing has a positive thing at it as well. So that's, I'm always looking at the positive things and always try to surround myself with people that are positive. And yeah, that's the vibe that I'm going with because that's what works.
Well, that's also the mark of a confident fighter. Like, you know that you're the best. So if you help him, he's just going to help you become even better than you are currently.
Yeah, but you got to be comfortable with that. Because you also see a lot of guys that are like, hey, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to help that guy. I'm not going to tell him whatever because it's not going to be good for me. But in the end, everybody that gets better can help me get better as well. Right. So I always position myself as a sponge. I try to get as much info in wherever I am. So for example, I'm now really going into acting. I want to act. So now Kevin was on your show as well.
Kevin Hart?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw you were training with him.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun.
The first kick he ever threw, he threw with you.
Yeah, so it was crazy.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, he was such a good guy. But so much positivity, and he has such a great vibe, and he's such a great mentor. And I was just sitting there, we were talking, and like I said, I was just positioning myself as a sponge. I was just trying to get as much information in there as possible. And yeah, now I'm here now in LA for about a month. Now I've been training with Mark Wahlberg, and also the same thing.
Anthony Hardonk is here.
Yeah. So it's amazing because when you're in LA and you want to do Dutch kickboxing, that's the place that's where the you got to go. Yeah.
Hardonk's awesome. Yeah. I love that guy.
Yeah, he's amazing. So every time I'm in LA, I'm going
to. We should tell people where he goes. It's Dynamics.
Yeah.
Dynamics
MMA.
MMA, which is in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
And he just said they're opening up another one that he's going to run in West LA. When he used to fight in the UFC, I used to love watching him fight because he was probably one of the best leg kickers ever in the heavyweight division.
Yeah.
He would just fuck guys' legs up. You know, yeah, so technical.
Yeah, so much fun. So last Saturday we started sparring a little bit. Said, yeah, I'm looking for a little bit of sparring. I said, okay. He said, I didn't do anything for 10 years, but I want to do it. Just want to help you out. I said, it's good, but I just want to move around. You know, I don't want to kick nobody's ass. I just want to move around. So that's what we did. We had a lot of fun. So, and then you still see he has that feeling, has that Dutch kickboxing touch. So it's amazing.
Yeah, no, there's not a lot of like real high-level Dutch kickboxing that you can get in California, especially out here.
No.
He's definitely the guy to go to.
But just heavyweights is difficult. Heavyweight sparring is hard.
Yeah.
Good level heavyweight sparring. So, yeah, we just keep going around, and that's why I love being here. So, actually, I'm here for vacation, but when I'm here, I got to work as well. So,
So the fight is in December, you're saying, right?
It's going to be in
December. When December?
The 21st.
Oh, okay. So right before Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. So that's what I said. Maybe we'll do it in January.
Fuck, I wish it was in America. I wish it was in America. I would love to see that shit.
Why?
Well, I don't want to go to Holland.
Why not?
I'm busy.
Come on.
Listen, I love
that
it.
Was disrespectful. I don't want to go to Holland.
Listen, not that I don't love Holland.
Hey, you want to
go. I'm busy.
You want to come to Holland, man. That's a lot of fun.
I'm sure. I'm sure. But if it was in like Chicago or some shit, I'd fly out. But Holland, that's a lot of flying.
Yeah,
that's a lot
like
of time.
11 hours, yeah.
11 hours on a plane. Hey. You get jet lag, stay for a couple of days. I don't have a week to spare.
No?
I wish.
Yeah. You a busy man.
So you're out here trying to act too? That's what you're going to try to do?
Yeah, yeah.
So you get an agent and meeting with people and stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm with Paradigm. It's my American management.
Now, you obviously speak fluent English.
Yeah.
But are you taking lessons to get better at it so you can act and all that jazz?
Yeah.
So that's your next goal.
Exactly. So I'm still an active athlete, but I'm still looking at, like, hey, what can I do next? Because I can't and I don't want to do this for, like, 10 more years.
When do you want to retire? Do you have a thought in your head?
I don't know. It depends on what...
Well, right now you're in your prime.
Yeah. So it depends on what comes on my route. So
yeah,
I'm still looking at... So now I'm in negotiations with Glory.
How is Glory doing as an organization? Are they doing well?
Yeah, they're doing good.
Because I know they were struggling a little bit in America. They were trying to...
Yeah.
But do they still have events here in America?
Yeah.
Or less?
Yeah, yeah, but less. Less than in the beginning.
Because Europe is so much more successful over
so there. So there we fill up like arenas.
Mm-hmm.
So here we can get like 5.
But
10,
I went
000
to the last man standing in LA when Joe Schilling was there.
Yeah.
Holy shit, was that crazy.
Yeah.
That was awesome. But I always tell people, like, you want to see real high-level striking.
Yeah.
You see high-level striking in MMA, but with MMA, there's all the other variables.
Yeah.
There's takedowns and, you know, small gloves, the whole deal. Like, do you really want to see high-level kickboxing?
Yeah.
Glory's where it's at.
Exactly. So that's, for me, now where I'm at is, like, I'm still in negotiation with Glory for a new contract. And if we... in what way or the other we can get out of it, so maybe I'm gonna do something else, or I don't know, I'm looking at the sport like a totally different way. I think the sport can totally be elevated in all certain ways, you know, all different ways, because how crazy would it be to do mixed fights? It's fun to go from one guy go to the other sport. But how cool would it be that the other guy would go to the other sport as well?
So someone from MMA coming to kickboxing?
And the other way around.
Yeah. Well, the other way around, see, I mean, I could see, like, Francis Ngannou. I think he would do really well in kickboxing
because
he's such a fucking ridiculously powerful striker.
Yeah.
He would do really well. But I don't think there's a lot of other – well, I mean, obviously Alistair, if Alistair really dedicated himself to it. But he's chasing the goal of being a UFC heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, who else? I mean, the only other organization is ONE. And ONE has, they do kickboxing as well now.
Yeah.
They do kickboxing and Muay Thai. And they do Muay Thai with little gloves, which is kind of crazy.
That was pretty crazy. Yeah.
Have you thought about doing that? No?
Not really.
You like the big gloves?
That's crazy, yeah. But I don't mind doing the small gloves, but kickboxing with small gloves is pretty insane.
How
pretty
come?
Intense. Because there's no way to block anything anymore. It's
right.
Just stand up and fight. You can just put the gloves out and just do bare knuckle fight because that's almost the same.
Right. So in terms of, like, for people who don't understand, when you have big gloves on, there's more, you can protect yourself
exactly.
more. You can shell up better.
Yeah.
And defensively, you know, Liam Harrison.
Yeah,
he fought in ONE with little gloves in Muay Thai, and he was like, "Holy!" He sent me a message like, "Fucking brutal, man." he's like, "I can't believe how hard it is. It's so much different."
Yeah, it's totally different. Yeah. You can't clinch. You can do whatever. So, yeah, that's pretty insane. So, but like I said, you know,
I don't know why
so
ONE's doing that. I mean, because I know they do have some matches where they wear big gloves
too. To push,
make it exciting.
Push the limit again.
Yeah. Well, they have so many different kinds of matches over there.
Yeah.
They even have grappling matches, like straight grappling.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, have you been to ONE at all?
No.
Have you been? They're gigantic.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Asia, fucking huge, man. They're
you
big.
Been there?
No, but I've a bunch of friends have gone over there to coach and even to fight, and you know, and a couple people from the UFC. Misha Tate, she has some executive position over there right now.
Okay.
Rich Franklin does as well,
mm-hmm.
who used to be the middleweight champion
of
the UFC.
Yeah.
So they have a bigger audience worldwide than the UFC does. They're
That's
huge
crazy.
In
yeah.
Asia, just gigantic. Keep getting bigger and bigger, and they got really high level fighters too. Yeah. So it's really interesting. But I know they're doing a lot of kickboxing as well.
Yeah. So who knows? Who knows?
More the better, right? More competition, the better.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Because that's what brings the whole sport up.
Yes.
To a new level. So that's perfect and that's cool. But it's like I said, it's I just like to do different stuff.
Yeah.
And now, like I said, I don't want to fight for another 10 years. So let's see what's going to happen. You know, I'm going to make a movie either way. So I'm going to start filming a movie the beginning of next year. So that's pretty cool.
What's the movie?
It's like totally from blank we started it. So it's been written now. I got the first draft of the script and it's crazy.
Can you tell me what you do?
So I'm like a black ops kind of guy, but something happens during operation and I stop because I think like, hey, this what happened is crazy. I told them not to do this and it still this happened, so I'm gonna stop. And yeah, and
but they bring you back.
I get back.
You gotta go back and kick some ass.
Exactly,
shoot
exactly.
Some people, kick them.
So
you
yeah,
kick
that's
people.
Cool. Of course.
Of course.
But I'm not, that's the thing. I said, I don't want to be a fighter because people already know me from fighting.
Right.
So I want to do something else. I want to really show my acting skills.
Right.
So that's going to be so much fun. And that's what I get my excitement from because I love doing new stuff. I'm doing kickboxing since I was 6 years old. I've been doing this like forever. So I want to do something else as well. So that this is going to be a lot of fun.
It's a hard transition. Not a lot of people have been successful at it. Like Randy Couture is probably the most successful at it. You know, he's got a real career as an actor now.
Yeah.
I mean, he acts in a bunch of movies, man. Obviously he's in The Expendables, but he's always working.
Yeah. But a lot of, in the end, when you look at the history, a lot of athletes did it.
Yeah, sure.
But not a lot were like really good. But in the end, we had like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jean-Claude Van Damme. And stuff
sure,
like that. So,
sure.
It's possible, and I like the challenge.
Is there ever a worry of being like one foot in, one foot out with your fighting career? Like if acting starts to take off, but you're still fighting, is there a worry about not being 100% all in?
No, because then the thing we said, and I also discussed this with my trainer, because he's really cautious with that. He's like, hey, when we focus on making a movie, that's what we're gonna focus on. And if we're going to have a fight, we're going to fully focus on that. So no side things or, like, oh, let's do this for a second and then we go back.
Mm-hmm.
No, just going to focus on that.
Because that's what does fighters in.
Exactly.
I mean, you've seen it like that. That happened with Ronda Rousey. It's happened with other fighters where they just get too spread thin.
Yeah.
They get spread too thin and they have too many different projects going simultaneously.
And still, people still say that about me now at this moment. Like, hey, Rico's not focused. He does everything. I say, hey, but I train every day. I'm focused in what I'm doing. I'm focused in kickboxing, but I just like the acting part. I just want to gain my knowledge and get better at it. So you got to train it. This is the same as kickboxing.
Yeah.
You just got to stay focused.
Do you ever do any jiu-jitsu?
I did some. Yeah. I like it. It's a lot of fun. But now the last 2 years have been so busy with kickboxing and everything that happens on the side. It's just no time.
So you don't have any real designs of eventually transferring to MMA?
You know, like I said, for me, when I look at it, because people ask me this a lot, like, Rico, why don't you go to MMA? So, yeah, it could be possible, but like if I look at it honestly, it's not my basic ambition to go there because my next ambition, because when I look at it, it's like if you jump into something different, you should have the will and want to be the best.
Right.
And I don't necessarily have the will to be the best at MMA. But if you get a crazy offer.
That's what I was going to say. Someone comes along with the real shekels.
You can think about some stuff.
Starts laying some paper out. Come on, Rico.
You can look. Okay. Keep it going. Just a little bit more. Okay, I'm let's go. I got this. I'm motivated. No, so that's
exactly what. But if you did decide to do that, how much time do you think you would legitimately need for like a real high level opponent to work a year. Takedown because defense.
I know what to do. I've trained this for like 2-3 years, so I know. But my body just needs to work on it. Have a fight in between, maybe another fight, and then I'm gonna be able to do a high level fight.
Now, do you do any other kind of cardio? Do you run or?
Of course.
Yeah. Do you?
I hate it.
You hate it?
But you have to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's also for a big guy. It's more of a pain in the ass too. Yeah. Like, what do you weigh? About 250, somewhere around there.
260.
Yeah. So that's when you're running. That's a lot of weight.
It's a lot of weight on your joints. Yeah. Constantly the pressure and so. But in the end, how much I hate it. Just it works for me because it's also for me a mental training. Because I hate it so much, and I jump on the treadmill or I go outside and I just run. Come on, you gotta keep going. You gotta keep going because when you have that feeling, like 90% of the people would stop.
Mm.
Say, but you're not that person. You gotta keep going, and that's what motivates me, just to do things different than everybody else does.
Being comfortable, being uncomfortable.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. The grind.
The grind is, I think that's the moment when it starts. When you get that feeling, shit is gonna hurt. Your body starts hurting. And that's when, like, a lot of people give up. And that's where we as champions, we continue.
It's interesting, too, because a lot of fighters, they'll do all sorts of high-intensity training and interval training and all these different plyometrics and cardio and different things. But many of them will tell you that one of the more important things is just long range running.
Yeah.
Because when you do this long distance running, where you run 5, 6, 7 miles, when you do that, you develop this cardio base.
Yeah.
Just where you can just keep working and you recover faster.
Yeah.
And exactly. It's just, I mean, that's one of the things that if you go back and look at old time fighters, you know, back to Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Robinson, all those guys, everybody ran.
Everybody did.
Rocky Marciano, everybody ran.
Yeah.
There wasn't an option.
No.
It wasn't like you don't have to run, we can do a bunch of other things. Like, no. Fighters run.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah.
But it's just, I always feel like running is not the base of your, it's not most important, but it's like really important factor of the total package.
Right.
So it's just your, the oxygen you have, like for keeping the same pace for a longer time than. Of course, the explosiveness that we use during a fight is important, but also just the your basic lung capacity should be big as well.
What about heavy bag work?
Yeah, we do it, but
not that much.
Yeah, I think like once a week.
So more pad work, more technical things.
Yeah,
not like, because I see some guys. It's really interesting how different camps, different fighters, different trainers prefer different preparation methods.
Yeah.
And some swear by intervals on the heavy bag. Some swear by doing rounds on the heavy bag. You know, and some don't think it's that critical.
Yeah, I think for everybody it's different. But like for me, throughout all those years, I've been trying different stuff. And I think now I created the right combination of different trainings, just polishing everything. Mm-hmm. And I think I found the right way to get fit, because I need to get better. I'm always looking to get better, but you get better by putting in the work. But I'm always looking at how can I change my training up, what would be an add-on what I already have.
Right.
So now I think I created the right combination, but and still I'm looking to add stuff on. But I think I created the right way to get fit for a fight, because I've shown that throughout all those years. I've shown that I'm fitter than all the rest, and that's a part. But still, I think the biggest difference is that everybody is strong and everybody is fit and everybody can fight. But the biggest difference is mentally. What happens to you mentally when you get to the fourth and fifth round? I think that's the most important thing. How strong are you mentally to continue fighting? A lot of people, when you feel like, always, for the people that do not understand what this what this fighting game is, what happens to you when you're in the ring or in an octagon. So you can, I always compare it with driving a car. You're driving a car and the last, what is it, 40, 50 miles, the gas light comes on. Hey, you gotta get gas. That's the same thing that happens to your body. When you get tired, whatever happens in your mind or your head, hey, you're tired. When you're tired, you need to rest. And we as athletes, we do not listen to that light that goes off in your car. And even in my car, I don't listen. I always go. I had a few times that I was on the side of the road without gas. So I'm sorry, but...
Is that psychological? Do you do that because you think of your car like a body? Yeah. Like you try to fuck you, car. Don't be a pussy.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you. Appreciate that. But that's, yeah, I think that is what it is. You know? And
it's like the same game you're playing. You're playing that game with your car.
It's so stupid. But for me, it works. Because I always push my car to the limit, that's what I do to myself as well, you know. And that's what I luckily have a great team of people around me for. Because even when everything is hurting and tired and I almost get overtrained, my people have to pull me back. Say, Rico, there's no point in training now. Because you're going to get overtrained and you're going to fuck yourself up.
Right. That's the fine balance, right? It's hard to figure out.
I don't have the balance.
Right.
I don't have it. I try to have it. And every time in a preparation, I think I got it. Now I got it. I don't got it.
So you need other people around you that are objective that can tell you.
Like, hey, Rico, you got to step back. Because for me, in my mind, I don't know what it is, but when I'm not working... I'm standing still or going down.
Mm.
That's what happens in my mind. So I got to keep working. I got to keep grinding.
Right, but that's also because of your style, because of the fact that you do push such a tremendous pace that you're constantly feel like you have to have your foot on the gas.
Yeah.
Right? That's interesting. So you've been with the same coach for a long time?
Yeah, like since I was like 17.
Oh, so that's great. So they know you. Yeah. Yeah,
when I come in, they so know critical. What's going on.
So critical, right?
And the whole team. So my power coach.
Oh, okay. So the same team the entire time.
Can you imagine like in the beginning of when we were working like for 3-4 years, and then I come in Monday morning, power training, and my trainer walks up to me looking at me. What the hell? What the hell did you do this weekend? What do you mean? What have you been eating? Yeah, Saturday night I went to the McDonald's. What's the problem? Look at your blown head, man. See, fat holds the water in the fluid.
He could tell from one McDonald's meal? Really?
That's how close we were. So that's how, like, he sees me like multiple times a week. So he saw me like Friday.
So he just knows you.
He just knows everything.
Did you monitor your heart rate or anything like that?
Yes, every morning I check my blood pressure, stuff like that, get my temperature.
Do you do it with a computer? Do you have a program? Do you run?
No.
Just write it down?
Yeah, just write it down and then send it to the doctor every now and then.
So if your heart rate is a little bit too high in the morning, do you just do it like an active recovery day, just relax?
Yeah, we now check it more through the temperature than through the heart rate.
Really?
Yeah.
Temperature.
So, yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
So when my temperature is up, I got to watch out.
So you might be fighting off a cold or something like that?
Something like that, off a cold, or you still, your body's still recovering from last trainings.
Mm.
So from that we can, I've been doing it now for a few years, and that's exactly when I feel like, hey, when my temperature goes up and it goes there, this doesn't feel good. And then every time when we, in the end, we always look back at it and analyze stuff. And then my trainer said, hey, exactly there. Mm. Because this training was shit.
So do you make a log during your training and compare it to like your last camp And you look at the numbers and make sure that everything lines up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you kind of have to be, right? At this point in time, if you want to really get everything dialed in, you kind of have to be scientific about everything, right?
Yeah, because there's so much more than just fighting and good training. It's like good nutrition and this and that. And it's just everything has to be balanced out.
I was going to ask you about that. Do you have a dietitian or a someone who cooks for you?
Yeah. So in camp. So in I think like 2 years ago I started with that.
Do you eat horse meat?
Yeah, not.
Isn't that a big thing over there? Like Alistair's a big horse meat guy.
No, I think that was a good excuse for the things that he did next to fighting.
That's what everybody said too. Everybody was like, "Yeah, horse meat."
No horse meat. Yeah. Hey, it works.
Yeah, look at the size of him. Got to get him some horse meat. Yeah.
No, I have no clue. No, it's not like in my diet or something. It's just
what do you eat?
A lot.
Eat a lot?
Yeah.
Multiple meals a day?
Yeah, for sure. So, but that's the fun. People are like, how much do you eat? It's crazy. So, yeah, but I burn a lot as well. So I have to. And for me, the fun thing with that is the fun and the strange thing when I tell people, said when I get closer to the fight, I'm eating myself slim. So the more I'm eating, the slimmer I'm getting because I'm training very hard and your body's just in a burning process. Like,
right.
And when the food is gone, it's going to start burning fat. So I get slimmer the closer I get to the fight.
Mm.
I said, but when you see what I eat, it's like, how do you do that? But it's just all
because you're just clean. Training so much.
Yeah.
So what kind of foods do they prepare for you? Do they have like those pre-prepared packets? And you just heat them up or something like that? Like, how does that work?
Like
a meal prep company does?
Yeah, no, it's just like a private cook.
Okay.
Yeah, private chef that runs with me and just make sure every day I get.
And they check the macros and make sure that you get the right amount of protein, the right amount of carbohydrates.
Yeah, so it's not like really like that everything is put on a scale or something like that. We don't do that because. Yeah, in certain things I just want a little bit more, or I'm still a little bit hungry. So
it's not like you need to lose weight or anything.
No,
yeah, right.
So, but still I have in my mind always a certain type of fight weight that I like to fight on.
What is that weight?
Like 118 and a half.
118 and a half kilos. What is that?
I think it's around
258.
I think.
Well, it's 2.2 pounds, 2.2 kilos, or 2.2 pounds per kilo.
118 is 260 pounds.
260. Oh, 260. So that's right around there, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, then I'm lying. Then I'm now a little bit heavier. Guys, come on. I'm in LA.
Yeah.
No, I went in and out a few times. So
how could you not?
Yeah. So it's got to be around 265.
Do you try to stay pretty healthy in terms of your diet, though, even when you're not in camp?
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, people say, like, Rico, how do you do it? I said, for me, fighting is a lifestyle. It's not like when I go, when I wake up, this morning, I go to the gym, think about the fight, focus, go out to the gym, and my focus is all of it. I said, I wake up with it, I go to bed with it, and when I'm in bed, I'm dreaming about it. I think this is 24/7 every day. I'm thinking about it. So every meal, every thing you do is just thinking about what's coming.
That's why you're the champ.
Yeah, I think so. But for me, it's like such a crazy thing that goes on in my mind because I train twice a day, and then at night when I'm at home, think like, you know what? I'm in front of the television, my wife on the couch, and I'm like, I'm gonna do some stretching. I'm just gonna sit on the ground, just stretch. Or do some more ab work. It's just, I don't know. I think like I'm obsessed. Or
of course, you have to be obsessed. I mean, you're in one of the most dangerous combat sports in the world, and you're the world champion.
So it's constantly that pressure, and I just think, hey, my opponent probably now is resting or whatever he's doing. I don't care, but I need to do something extra.
Right.
So constantly that's running through my mind. Everything that I'm doing, he's not doing.
Now, do you take vitamins and supplements?
Yeah.
What kind of stuff do you take?
Well, it's really like all natural stuff, and I go to the doctor, so he takes my blood, mm-hmm. and then from there on, he always looks at how does it look? Is it looking right. good? Maybe you need some more nutrient iron levels, or right. whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he fills it up whenever it's needed, and during the period I'm training, I just take the normal stuff. Magnesium, iron, whatever, just
right.
Vitamin C, stuff like that, just to keep everything on the right level. And then once a month, I go to him, or the closer we get to the fight, maybe go twice a month, and then you just check it, like, okay, it's good. Or now, oh, you got a lot of white blood cells, so you're getting close to being, your muscles are tired, you know, maybe mm-hmm. getting overtrained, so look at that. Maybe get some more protein, you know. Stuff like that. So that's how we try to do that.
What else do you do for recovery? Do you do any cryotherapy yeah. or things along those lines?
Yeah. So I've been starting that like 1.5 years ago or something. And it works. I like it.
Do you do it? Do you do ice baths or like what do you do?
No. I just do literally the cryo.
The
machines.
Oh, so like frozen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did like two different in Holland. Now it's like really starting to be a hype. So now yeah. they get like different places.
Do you go in the one that is from the neck down or the one that gets your whole body in there?
Yeah. So first I started with the one with the neck down.
The whole body's the better one though.
Yeah.
Right? There's a place out here, cryotherapy. It's the fucking shit. I
yeah.
love it.
Yeah, it's
240
nice.
Degrees below zero, and just yeah. get in there for 3 minutes. You yeah. motherfucker. Motherfucker.
But it's also free. I'll get yeah. in there like a mental training. Yes. I'm like, come on. You got to
yeah.
get
yeah.
So that's what I started with. And then, but the I think the only one we have now is in Amsterdam, like the mm-hmm. full body. And like Amsterdam is like 2 hours.
Oh, yeah.
1.5 hours.
So well, from the neck down's good enough.
Yeah. I mean. So now I'm going to. I get one. I get one in my own gym.
Mm-hmm.
So just I can jump in and right. out easy.
Yeah.
So just start with that, and then from there I'm gonna see how it works. But
what about
it,
sauna?
Yeah, I use it, but not too often.
So good, man.
I know.
But so good for recovery.
If you don't like it. But I like it for the full first 2 minutes, and then afterwards, I'm like, it's like again, it's like
mental
training.
Yeah.
I know, but yeah. I'm like, after my wife's like enjoying it. There's it's like, oh, I love it. It's so nice. I'm like, come on, you got this. Come on,
because you're playing a game with yourself. You can't just enjoy it.
Your opponent will probably get out now. You're gonna stay in. Come on, it's like really sweat just dripping off. Like it's like really.
I was
a
fucking
fight.
Myself up because I was trying to crank it up too. I had Laird Hamilton on the podcast.
Yeah.
He's a surfer, big time surfer, and his wife Gabriella Reese was telling me that he cranks his up to 220 degrees. So I did that for a little bit. I got up to like 210, 218.
Yeah.
But I think it was burning my lungs. I think I was cooking in there. I really do. Like I would feel like shit. And then I would get out, I'd be so fucking tired. I was like, I don't think this is good for you. So then I dropped it down. Now I do normal. Now yeah. I do it like 180, which is normal, 180 yeah. degrees yeah. Fahrenheit. I don't know what that is, Celsius.
Yeah, I think like 80, 85.
Yeah, but that's normal. That's like a normal hot sauna. Good enough. 20 minutes, I'm in, I'm out.
It's pretty hot. It's pretty hot for me.
Yeah, it's hot, man. It's hot. But it's very good for you, those heat shock proteins. And they did these studies that showed a 40% decrease in mortality for all causes. Heart attack, stroke, cancer. 40% decrease for people who use the sauna for 4 times a week or more. That was in, was that Sweden, Jamie? Do you remember? Dr. Rhonda Patrick.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
She,
that's interesting.
She was talking about it.
I didn't know that.
Explaining it. Yeah, it's phenomenal for you because of heat shock proteins. It makes your body, reduces inflammation throughout your whole body.
Okay.
As does cryotherapy. Anything where you're dealing with extreme cold or extreme heat, your body develops either heat shock proteins or cold shock proteins.
Yeah. So I also, there was this place where I went for the cryo, and he said, oh, we also got something else. I don't know what it's called. What is it called? Can't remember. So you just get like put in a cocoon or something,
uh-huh.
and just go to sleep.
Oh yeah. Oh,
but you're in water, so you're like floating. So the water is like
you're floating.
Yeah, the water is floating. It's called floating. That's what it's called. I was like, what the hell? I'm floating. That's what the fuck it's called.
You mean like a float tank? Like
yeah. Like, but it looks like a cocoon.
Oh, okay, I know what you're talking about. And then
they just close it and they put you in there.
Sensory deprivation tank. Yeah,
for an hour. And
I have one right here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's awesome.
I'm going to sleep for an hour.
All right, go ahead. Take a nap. It's a big one, too.
All right, guys, I'm
out. You'd fit in it. It's huge. The one I have here is huge. Yeah.
Well, why? You're so small.
Yeah, but that's the best one they have. I just wanted one that anyone can come in. It's 7 feet long and 9 feet high.
Yeah. It's amazing. And they say when you finally get to the point where you know how to work with it mentally and relax.
Yes.
It's the same as 1 hour. It's like 4 or 5 hours of sleep.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You relax, and it's also your body absorbs magnesium.
Yeah.
Because it's Epsom salts. So all the salt that's in the water is 1,000 pounds of salt in the water. All that Epsom salts, the magnesium gets through your skin into your bloodstream. So it's really good. It's almost like taking it's as good or better than taking a magnesium supplement.
Yeah.
Really good for your muscles too. Like everything gets loose and relaxed, and it feels like everything stretches out. And
yeah.
What about
also tried that.
Yeah.
I'll
show you to you when you get out of here. What about massage? Do you get massage?
Yeah. Like daily.
Daily. Yeah.
Yeah. So my physiotherapist comes in to the house and just keeps the blood flowing.
Nice.
And just make sure, everything, not just for recovery, but also, also just for the injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep checking, like, oh, what's this, what's that,
right,
what's hurting. And so luckily I've been doing pretty good, not too many injuries.
Yeah, having a good massage therapist to deal with injuries is just gigantic.
It's so important.
They can prevent things, fix things that are starting to go south. They can stop it in its tracks and loosen everything up. And because sometimes when you get an injury, right, everything around it tightens up, and then when you're training, it gets even more fucked up. But if someone can loosen that up, then it has time to relax and heal.
Yeah, or else just getting more tense, and then you're gonna rip something or whatever. So yeah, that's so important, and I think that's one of the key factors in being a pro athlete is the people you have around you.
Yes.
And the team that helps you balance everything out. And they say, hey, like, Rico, you're the fighter. I say, yeah, I'm Rico the fighter. I'm Rico the champion because of all those people that are
the team.
Yeah, that are around me. So still, in the end, you're doing an individual sport, but you have a great team around you to be that person that you are in the ring.
And at the highest level, I think you have to have that. You have to have all the ducks in line, right?
Yeah.
You have to have everything in line if you want to be at the very top of the heap.
Yeah, you have to.
What about psychology? Do you have a mental trainer or anybody who's like a sports psychologist?
Well, that's the fun thing. I started off with the guy I was telling you about, Oliver Lima. He's also kickboxing world champion in different weight divisions. And I was training with him, and he took me with his training. Took me to his training, and I was working with him in his prime. And without him knowing, he was teaching me so much about mental training, because I was training with him, and he was never giving up. And the moment when I just showed something, like, he gave even more gas.
So when you,
like,
started slowing down?
Yeah. And he was even pushing the pace even more. And that's what I was seeing in his fights. And I was just studying him. And from that, I learned so much. And I respect him. I'm still so thankful for that. So, and he's still my mental coach with that. So he's in my corner. And every time when he says something, I just think about, I don't want to disappoint this man, because he knows how important this is. And I think from the start of last year or something, I was really like a little bit skeptical about talking to people like a psychologist or something. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know. Let's talk about personal stuff, you know, that's pretty deep with somebody you don't know. I don't know. Maybe in my mind just doesn't add up, you know, it doesn't feel good. But still, I got in the situation that I just had to, and I went there, and it actually felt pretty good. So from that moment on, I just kept on doing it. Just talk about just talk about stuff. You know, mm-hmm. it's just, you like no other know what, how many things happen, of what everything that happens in your life, and you just gotta process all that stuff. But right. sometimes you just, so many things happen in your life that you just can't process.
And you put them away and yeah, you don't think about it. And they're fucking with you in the back of your head.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then when you just have the time and, or take the time to talk about that stuff, you just, it just feels a lot better. It feels like a bag of bricks on your back. You just fall off. It's like,
yeah.
It feels good. So
I think of it the same way you were talking about physical therapy. That like if you have little injuries, nagging injuries, yeah. you get it massaged out and everything loosens up. I think of it the same way. If you're not taking a good account of what's going on in your mind, you can develop like little mental injuries.
Yeah, exactly. But for me, and maybe a lot of people have, maybe not nowadays, but like from back in the days, people still had like, when you're talking to a psychologist, you're crazy.
You're not right, what, right, you, right, right.
That,
or you're weak.
Yeah, that's what. That's how people in Holland like,
yeah,
approached it.
Well, like, for here, for a long time here, for fighters, it was the same thing. Like most fighters didn't need a psychologist. That's not for winners. Winners know how to win. You just don't be a pussy. Go out there and fucking fight.
Yeah,
but that's nonsense. Like you, there's no pussies in professional fighting.
No,
you know, but there is edge. You can get an edge. Yeah. You can get an advantage. Whether you get that advantage from getting massage or cryotherapy or from a sports psychologist, there's advantages to be had.
Yeah. So, but I think that's what my what I got from my dad is just being tough and being hard on yourself in whatever situation you're in. Just be tough on yourself and just because that's what he was. He was tough on himself, and so that's what I got from him. And but now I just think like, okay, just do. Tweak everything up and just get mentally in balance. And especially when he passed away like almost 2 years ago, it's just, yeah, it was tough. It was tough, especially when the relationship we had wasn't like, was like on and off. And when it was on, it was like a lot of discussion and it just hurts. And then things happen in your life and you just try to process everything and give it a certain spot, but it's just hard sometimes, and you just need somebody outside of your comfort zone to talk about that,
right?
And yeah, that really worked and helped for me, so I'm very thankful for that. And just, you know, I think always how I approach things is just everything in life happens for a reason, whatever, positive or negative. And sometimes you know what happens and why it happened, and sometimes you probably know it after like a few years, and maybe you never know it. But in my opinion, everything in life, positive or negative, happens for a reason, and you just, yeah, it's on you.
Whether it does or doesn't, if you decide that it does, that it happens for a reason, and you can find benefit in good or bad things, then it does happen for a reason. But yeah. You make that distinction that it's going to be for your benefit, that it can help you in the long run. That's the difference between a person who takes things that happen, adversity in life, and decides that the world is against them.
Yeah.
I can't catch a break. The world's fucking me over. Those people wind up becoming losers versus someone who says, you know what? We're going to be fine. This is going to make me better. It's going to make me stronger. This is going to make me understand. I'm even though I'm more vulnerable right now, this is going to make me understand myself better. It's going to ultimately make me better at everything I do. Exactly. If you decide that, then they do. Then things do happen for a reason.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons I love watching your podcast, because that's what you bring. And especially what I think for people that maybe sometimes struggle with certain things, or like you just explain in a situation where you think like, fuck, what the fuck did I do to life that constantly everything just backfires on me? I always think like, you are responsible for the choices that you make in your life and nobody else.
You're also responsible for how you accept or how you focus on your life.
Exactly.
How you think about things and how you process it. You're responsible for it.
Yeah. So, and those are things like are so important to me. And that's what I mean with, I try to surround myself with people that boost my flame.
Mm.
And just look at my phone and just like go through it, like, who did I text or who did I call? Like, you know, those people need to boost my flame. They need to be important in one way or the other. Doesn't mean that they have to be important in business or in work, or it can be in every, in love or in family or whatever. It need to be important in some kind of way. I just need to have positivity around me, because I've seen so many negative things from my family side that it's like it doesn't work.
It drains you.
And I believe like it's like karma. If you're negative, you will attract more negative things. If you're positive, all positive things will come your way. I'm 100%.
I believe that as well. Do you have a visualization plan when you go into a fight? Like, say, like this rematch with Badr Hari.
Yeah.
Are you going to sit down and visualize certain scenarios? Do you train your thought process to go over scenarios or to have a game plan in your mind, the way execute the fight the way you would like to imagine it?
Of course. I think every fighter does. And
before, is this something you set aside? Like, do you meditate and set aside time to do that, or you just do that all the time?
No, it just happens.
You're just doing it all the time.
Yeah. You're in the car or whatever. Right. It just happens when you're on the treadmill or whatever. It just happens when you think about what's going to happen in the upcoming months. You just know that, okay, this is going to be next level. Okay, but how are we going to approach this fight? What is going to happen? What might happen if he does this, I do that. Okay, but this could happen and that could happen. And in my mind, before going into the fight, I fought it already like 1,000 times, or maybe even more. Because you're thinking about this person and this fight for so long, and for like 3 or 4 months, that's a long time. So that happens. And what I always feel like what's fun to people to realize is that my confident level during a period of like 3-4 months into a fight goes like
up and down.
And people are like, how is that possible? You are the fucking best at what you're doing. You're smacking the shit out of everybody in training and in camp. And how does that happen? I don't know, but that is what happens. I think that happens to everybody.
So you just accept the process.
You just accept the process, but it's such a fucking frustrating process that when you're here, just try to get back up there again. But you know that it's part of the process, because I've been doing this for my whole life. So I know it's part of the process, but still it's frustrating. So, and that's what, for example, such a mental coach and a psychologist can help you with, to cope with that at that moment, so that you don't stay here. Mm-hmm. You do climb back up again. But it's, and then you say, where does that come from? It can come from anywhere. You know, from your body being tired. Like, hey, why can I cope with this training? Or why is this training getting to me? Or during sparring, why did I get hit 5 times with the right hand and didn't block or react or whatever? So it can come from anywhere.
And then the monotony of training as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So now this fight that's going to be happening December 21st, how can people get it? Is it going to be available on, is it on UFC Fight Pass?
Yeah, it's going to be UFC Fight Pass. And I believe it's on ESPN as well.
Okay. But is it ESPN 2?
2, I think so. 2? But I'm not 100% sure.
Well, I'll find out and we'll make sure we tell everybody when it's taking place. So we'll make sure we get a bunch of people to watch that, man.
Of course. This is going to be kickboxing history. So
it is. It really is. Like you said, probably the biggest fight in kickboxing history.
Yeah. Yeah. So and then, of course, like back in the days, we had so many great fights, and we had the K1 tournament. It was amazing. But this is just the biggest one-on-one fight from this era that everybody wants to see.
Well, I hope a million fucking people watch it or more, and I hope it really does open up the door for bigger and bigger fights, because I think that it's, look, Glory's amazing. You guys have so many incredibly talented fighters and so many high-level fights. I fucking love it, man. I'm just such a huge fan. I don't understand why it's not bigger in America. I know it's bigger in Europe.
But yeah, but that's, yeah, for us the same thing. So we just hope that during the years, you know, we just keep building it up, and hope, like, for example, with Anthony opening up more gyms, more great American kickboxers and American fighters will stand up and compete. That would be amazing.
Who knows? This might be it, man. One might be the one that changes the tide.
Exactly.
Well, good luck to you, brother, and thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you so much,
man. Really appreciate you.
Appreciate your time.
Oh, let everybody know your Instagram, your Twitter. What is it? How do they get it?
My Instagram and Twitter is all the same. Just Rico Verhoeven. All.
And spell it out for people so they just know how to spell Verhoeven.
Okay. So it's R-I-C-O, says Rico, and then V-E-R-H-O-E-V-E-N.
All right. Beautiful. That's it. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Peace.